Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast, where Bob Mackowitz is going down a wild run. He's going to have some caffeinated tea any moment now, Bobby. Excited?
Yeah, we're about to start Mr. Toad's wild ride. I start my day every morning with a coffee or two.
Yeah.
And then I usually I cool my jets.
Yeah.
Because I can get a little bit...
focused?
Unfocused, I think, is probably the right word. I like caffeine, mm-hmm. and I really like coffee.
Yeah.
After a certain point, though, diminishing returns.
Yeah, it's true. It's like wine. At a certain point, you're just drunk. You can't taste anything. And
right.
You just black out.
Yeah, I don't need any more energy. What I actually probably need is an Ativan.
Mm-hmm.
But I got stuff to do.
I just love the idea. You could be like, I'm the Lizard King after you have a couple sips of some caffeinated orange Pico tea.
So we're going to do the before and after. Yeah. As we start this pod at minute one,
mm-hmm.
I'm on my normal amount of caffeine.
Yeah.
In about 3 minutes, I'm going to have a green tea.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see where we're at minute 57.
Bob's going to be dropping some truth bombs at about minute 35.
We have so much to get to, Matt.
Yep.
So much to get to.
And you know what? Before we get to any of it, Bob's going to grab his tea right now. And
you want to talk Jeff Pollock?
Oh, I'm going to talk Jeff Pollock. Usually people are waiting for this near the end and they demand it. They're waiting for it. It's their favorite part is the read. Well, guess what, people? You're in luck. Do you want to hear about Daniel, Elizabeth, and Sasha's dad? Well, his name is Jeff Pollock, and he is our lawyer. He's like our legal daddy. He makes sure everything is okay when it comes to all legalese. I don't even know if that's a term. But here's what I do know. He handles all our legal stuff. He's really good at his job. He's a very nice guy. He's very attentive. If you are in need of a lawyer, Jeff Pollock is ours. We think he should be yours. JeffPollock.com. That's Jeff with a G. JeffPollock.com. 416-777-0088. 416-777-0088. Maybe Bob will need him to sue the big tea companies because we don't know what's going to happen.
We've been circling each other, Jeff and I.
I give him credit.
No, no, no. I've called him back. One thing that Jeff probably knows by now, but people who are listening to the pod may not know, mm-hmm. I disappear for long stretches of time.
You sure do.
Yeah. I don't like to be talked to.
Nope.
And I don't like to talk.
Nope. Yeah.
And it's totally on my terms.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, I don't really care about anything other than my desire to retreat.
Yes. Yeah, that'd be fair.
I realized I have three favorite animals,
mm.
the whale, the bear, and the loon.
Okay.
And all of these animals retreat.
Yeah.
The bear into his cave, the whale into the ocean, the loon into a lake.
Yeah.
And I realized, unwittingly, I have patterned my own life after these three animals.
So when I text you and then you get back to me 3 days later, that's you doing a loon?
Yeah.
It's like, Bob, what days,
I looned it.
What days work best? Then the loon comes up Thursday. You know. You go
the thing
loon.
Is, you know I've read it.
Yeah.
I just don't want to answer.
I know. It's infuriating. Like, that's the goddamn... I mean, I've known you for so long that I... The thing is, I never take it personal because I know there's not this rich tapestry of you getting back to everyone else but me. You know, it's equality across friends, family, enemies, allies, and everyone in between.
You know how you forget everybody's name? And so it's...
And face.
Yeah. So it's kind of not rude. Like, you're not...
Yeah.
It's like... powerful people, famous people, whatever.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter. You just you forget, right? And so in a way, like, you're an egalitarian.
Yeah.
I feel that way about my loon deep dives.
100%. 100%. I forgot Rick Chisholm, the head of TSN at the time, when I was an intern. And I forgot his name and face. Attractive women. You're like, oh, well, men, you know, they're shallow. They'll always remember the hotties. Nope. And the other day, I was on a plane walking to the back. I was on Porter, Amy, my girlfriend, flight attendant. So I just stood at the back of the plane. We were coming back from New York. And there's a woman there, and I know her face, but I don't know why. And she's like, hey, Matt. And now I'm having a conversation. Did I work with her 20 years ago? Did I see her last week? I have no idea. It is the most terrifying
thing. So who was
she? I don't know. But I had a nice conversation with her, her child, and I'm assuming her husband. I have no idea.
Maybe you went to high school together.
I might have. High school, Ryerson, McMaster, who knows?
And she said, hi, Matt.
Yeah, and then we talked for a little bit about being in New York and how nice the weather was and blah, blah, blah. And the whole time, like, I don't know why I should know you. And it's horrible. And I feel so bad.
Plus, with a history of blackouts.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, there you go. So, what do you want? Do you want to start Leafs? Claim Kershaw Leafs or movie popcorn spray?
I've got so many. I got two top fives.
Yep.
I got a crazy hot take.
Yep.
That you're going to do good take, bad take with me. It's a politics one that was actually inspired by one of your tweets.
Okay.
Don't let me forget it because I actually want to have this conversation with you. I want to get your take on this.
Sure.
Let's start Leafs just because I came to a realization this morning. Mm. I was up at 4:30.
Yeah.
And as you and I were joking, when I'm up before 5,
yeah,
I bring a lot of cards.
There is, yeah.
I got a lot of 5x7 cards.
Over here.
Yeah. I got a couple dozen cards with
all
me.
Right.
And I got to the Leafs and I was starting to write my thoughts and I actually stopped and put down my pen and said out loud, I don't care. Mm-hmm. 'Cause it occurred to me how stupid takes are in the first 5 games of the year.
Yep.
Like on something, unless something really specific happens, like a dumb on ice incident or a player says something afterwards. But like, there are no trends. I was about to start writing about Kapanen.
Yeah.
And we've talked about this on the pod before. I like Kapanen, but I think as a top 6 forward, I have questions.
Yeah.
He seems like he's incredibly fast. Mm-hmm. He's got skills, but he's a bit of a straight line player and he doesn't seem to make other players better.
Yeah.
That could change,
mm-hmm.
but to fit in that top 6 core, don't hold anyone back. Mm-hmm. It's too important on the team. And then I put down my pen and I thought, this is stupid. They've played 4 games. He's a kid.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of new here. He's playing with new line mates. Good line mates. But is it crazy to say, hey, let's give him 3 or 4 games.
Yeah.
Let him get into the season. The absolutely brand new season.
It's a great point, and it's the correct way of looking at it. There's only a couple things we can really say definitively.
Mm-hmm.
One, Nylander looks better in his first 4 games this year than he did last year.
That is a fair point.
And we can say that. As for Kapanen, Gino Retta brought up this point. I thought it was a good one. After the St. Louis game, and by the way, the Leafs were the better team. They lost, but they were the better team.
That was, and they weren't that great for stretches against Ottawa.
Yeah.
Then the blue wave hit and they soared off. And that's hockey.
That's hockey. But he brought up a good point. After the game against the Blues, reporters were asking about Marner and Tavares. Tavares hasn't scored and has only the same amount of even strength shots at net as Jason Spezza. That's a concern. But again, 4 games. But the reporters brought it up. Babcock said and puffed out his chest, yeah, Zach Hyman's a really good player, huh? Mm-hmm. Like, Babcock couldn't wait to praise Zach Hyman. And I never thought about this. I just thought it was Babcock being arrogant, Babcock going, see, I was right about Hyman. But what he was kind of doing was taking a shot at Kapanen. And it's like, it's 4 games in, and to your point, he's a young guy. I don't know about that approach.
Well, it's funny you say this, Matt, because I tried to think then, what can we talk about? Mm-hmm. Because the idea of talking about on-ice performance, unless there's some wild example, that's just nutso.
Matthew's shot looks great. Nylander looks way better.
Right. And we also know, like, Nylander might go, he will. They will both go into scoring slumps
because
scorers do.
Yeah.
And then they'll have 1 goal in 8 games and we'll be paranoid. And then the next 8 games, they'll have 6 goals. We'll be like, see, it was all fine. Anyway, what can we say with certainty? And I think it is, we are learning more and more about how Mike Babcock really is with this team.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like in real time, we are watching him try to figure out how to be the coach of this team because I believe he wants to be the authoritarian and I don't think that he can be with this group. And it almost feels like a collision of cultures that I'm watching. Maybe I'm wrong about this, but your point about Kapanen was really good and the Zach Hyman thing, it was totally unnecessary.
Yeah.
But it was really just about making him look good out there.
No one asked about Zach Hyman. They asked about Marner and Tavares and Babcock immediately pounce to that. Like, he had his talking points and it didn't matter what was said. He was going to go there.
The old Henry Kissinger. Okay. Now who has the questions for my answers?
Yeah, exactly. 100%.
I just think there's so many question marks around this team right now. Whole bunch of new players. Can mm-hmm. a team that's completely constructed around skill without size be successful? How do you manage goaltending? What is this new defense going to be like? Even the power play, we're starting to get answers to this question, but it was a question going into the year. I feel like Babcock's the constant.
Mm-hmm.
He's like the grown-up in the room.
Yeah.
And I'm really fascinated watching him this year navigate all of these messaging opportunities.
Well, tonight's going to be a messaging opportunity because Steven Stamkos, and I get why he did. He was angry after their loss to Columbus and talked about structure and this or that, which seemed to be an attack on John Cooper and Cooper's last 2 years of the playoffs have ended rather poorly. So, you know, you got that on that side, and you got Babcock on this side. By the way, I didn't realize this. After the first period, or at a certain point, Columbus outshot Tampa 27-2.
It's crazy, right?
To two! That's a mystery. That's a riddle.
One of I'm worried about Carolina quite a bit. I think you're talking about Carolina.
Oh, Carolina. As to, sorry, as sorry.
Columbus. Columbus. No, it's okay. Because their defense is so damn good. Like, they added Jake Gardner.
Mm-hmm.
And how they managed to do that, who knows? And I know there's going to be roster changes there because they can't keep all those players together. But we keep looking at Tampa and we keep looking at Boston because we have looked at them in the past.
Yeah.
But the sleeping giant in all of this is Carolina. Like, all the hipsters for years have said, this team is going to be great.
Yeah.
Eventually, even St. Louis, like, for years, it was like, when are they going to finally break out? Well, they did it post-Christmas last year.
In the most fluky way possible.
Well, maybe, and also driven by goaltending, but they have a hell of a roster.
Yeah, they did.
Watch for Carolina this year.
All right.
I'm interested in Tampa Bay, just because I always have been. I'd be more interested to watch the Leafs against Carolina. Is there a team that you actually would take as a measuring stick for the Leafs in the first 20 games?
Well, you're gonna get one tonight, yep. And you're gonna get it because it's angry Tampa. You know, they started at 1-1-1, and just that embarrassing loss to Carolina. So you know, as much as you want to do a measuring stick with a lowercase m, lowercase s, and a smaller font, you know, it's going to be that. But yeah, I think the first measuring stick is always the West Coast swing. You know, like the 4 games and 6 nights against the Pacific. That's usually one to keep an eye on.
I want to watch Austin Matthews back check tonight.
Okay.
Yep. I don't even care if they win or lose, but you know that they're committed to winning.
Yeah.
Or at least those top guys are. If Austin Matthews back checks.
Yeah.
Tavares will do it. He always does. Marner is actually pretty complete. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yep.
Nylander, I think, against St. Louis showed.
You look good.
Yeah. He looks there. And also, like, good old fashioned determination.
Yeah.
I want to see Austin Matthews skate on the ice tonight and say, okay, this is our team. They're at home tonight, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. We're at home, and we're going to beat this team. Mm-hmm. And here's how we're going to do it.
Yeah.
We're going to outwork them.
It's kind of like...
I would love to see that.
In high school, the hot guy doesn't have to develop a personality or a sense of humor to get the girl. Mm-hmm. You know, you're all trapped in the same little geographical area. And if you're the hot guy on the football team, it's just easier.
You're the alpha.
You're the alpha. For Austin Matthews, his offensive skills, his shot is the hotness.
Mm-hmm.
The back check is the personality and the sense of humor. You know, let's see if he's like, I don't need to do that because look what happens when I got the puck around the net. Goal, 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 goal,
okay,
goal.
Okay, ready for me to do Instagram reviews of Austin Matthews?
Yeah.
His wrist shot is bae.
Before anyone else.
Right.
I learned what that was. It's
me too.
Bae. Yes.
It's stupid saying it.
Yeah.
I want to punch myself for having said that. Did I even say that right?
Bob,
Austin Matthews' shot is bae.
Bob, you're lit. This whole thing is
I'm
lit.
I'm on fire.
We're going to stop that now.
I know. We're going to bring it back.
Talk about sensible slacks. So important.
Dockers are more comfortable than you'd think.
And with winter coming, you know, you have to make that transition.
I've made it. I made it. I got my Marty McFly sleeveless.
Yep. Well,
I guess all vests are sleeveless, but I brought it up. The under 30s used to love laughing at me when I would wear this.
Yeah.
It's basically like wearing a name tag that said, I'm a dad.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. I can't pull those off. The no sleeves, it's weird for me. It's just weird.
Well, I got the gun show going.
That's right.
I got the gun show. What do you want to do next, man? I got so many things to get to with you. It's insane.
Okay, let's do Clayton.
Okay.
And then we'll do NBA. How about that?
Yeah, okay. Do you got a take for Clayton? Because I have a very specific one.
I could not feel worse for him. And we sort of talked about it before. So I'm watching the game last night. And here was the note I made in the 7th inning. Is this the biggest moment of Kershaw's postseason career? Comes into the game, 2 men on, 2 out. Buehler is out of the game. He strikes out Adam Eaton. Big fist pump. Crowd is going nuts. Dodgers are up 3-1. 6 outs from going to the NLDS. And so, and that's my note. And I'm like, okay. And then, you know, the 8th inning, burp, 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 I'm prepping other stuff. And then, boop, boop. Rendon home run. Soto home run. Kershaw is out, and the look of pure just you know, sadness and frustration and how does this keep happening to me? I felt so bad. Like the swing of emotion on two swings of a bat were crazy.
I actually went to bed after he struck out Adam Eaton.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to see him come out for the eighth.
Mm.
Because I'm pulling for the Dodgers. The Dodgers are my West Coast team.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We've talked about this on the pod. I'm a Dodgers enthusiast.
Yeah.
I like the history of the organization.
Mm-hmm.
So I care if they win. Like, as soon as the Jays are out, I follow the Dodgers.
So you follow them in March.
And I love Clayton. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I love Clayton Kershaw. Love him.
Yeah.
He reminds me of Roy Halladay in the sense that you have two enormously gifted athletes who are recognized league-wide for their exceptional character.
Yep.
Very competitive, but also very, very disciplined, determined, principled individuals. So I've come up with this analogy.
Mm.
It's a new term. The Roger Zone.
Mm.
Because he reminded me of Roger Federer and the angst I feel when I watch him in these spots.
Oh, yeah, but Roger wins at the biggest moment.
But here's the thing. Has he?
Federer?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's won like 30, what is how many Grand Slams?
Well, no, I know, but here's what I mean. It's not about the past, it's about the present.
Mm.
And the Roger Zone is when an all-time great player that you not only love as an athlete, but admire as a human being is going out there and shitting the bed.
Yeah.
And every time you do it, there's got to be a kind of an almost a cosmic unfairness to it. It's like, but he's so great.
Yeah.
Oh, but he's losing. Like every time Rafa Nadal wins, my heart sinks because it just makes Roger less and less great. Clayton Kershaw should be remembered as the best pitcher of the 20th century. 21st century, sorry. But he might not be. Because this will always be the asterisk. This will always be the Buffalo Bills 0-4 in the Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah. With the difference being, like with the Dodger, like when the Bills, the first year, 1990, they were 13-3. They were a dominant team.
Let's not get into the Bills.
No, I'm just saying that like the Dodgers are actually a better version of the Bills because the Dodgers
are 106 wins. They won the last two divisions.
Yeah,
the last
two Dodgers dominating the regular season. The Bills in their third and fourth Super Bowl didn't. But you're right. Then we're going to go down.
I can't remember if it's seven or eight straight divisions in the NL West. It's the last two National League pennants, and they should have won this year. They were the better team.
They won the most games, won the most home games, scored the most runs, allowed the fewest runs. They started the season by hitting 8 home runs in the first game, and now they're out.
Corey Seager was not good.
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to remember that?
No. Oh, to add to that, you know what we're not going to remember?
Hmm.
We're not going to remember the Dodgers offense. The Dodgers, they go up 3-0 in the second or third inning. After that, they had two singles. Yes, after the third inning, when they went up 3-0, for the rest of the game, including the 10th, two singles. I think they one guy got hit and they got one walk. But that was it. We're going to focus on Kershaw, but the offense didn't do its job.
Sometimes, I mean, always, it's easier to point out what went wrong because it's glaring, especially when there's a narrative like this backing it up, like a, you know, just an elephant-sized narrative. But Steven Strasburg's performance last night, after getting rocked early and then totally pulling it together and shutting the Dodgers down, allowed the Nationals to win. And Strasburg has been this incredible story all year long. You follow the Nationals, right?
Yep.
They're kind of like your National League team.
Just because of the Tony Kornheiser podcast. So yeah, I know more about the Nationals than I do about any other National League team.
For the last, say, 10 years or so, I've known you to be quite up on Nationals.
Yeah. Teams. Yeah.
So fan or not, you're pretty knowledgeable. And so you know Steven Strasburg has been a complicated member of that.
You know one of his nicknames?
Hmm.
The Orchid. Because when the weather gets cold, he's not as good. Everything's got to be just right for him. And Strasburg's admitted earlier in his career, he couldn't come out of a bullpen. He couldn't do all these things. And he's come out of the bullpen. And earlier, Strasburg, after giving up a 2-run home run to Max Muncy, who'd been 0-12 against him in his career, you could see just he would have wilted. Mm-hmm. This was a different version. And also, the bullpen, which has always been an issue for the Nats, they all held strong. They usually lose that Milwaukee game, that wild card game, because they were behind in that. They usually lose this game 5. They've never won a game 5. They've never gone out of the NLDS. And they did it all last night.
So is it safe to say that only Houston, New York is going to save this Final Four?
St. Louis is always this, even though they're not a great team, they always have this presence.
They're the Jim Tomey of teams.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm rooting for the Nats. I'm rooting for Houston. I can't root for the Yankees. And I'm rooting for the Nats to win it all. Now, at this point, you're rooting for the Nats to win it all.
All right, so let me throw this out, because here's what I realized, much to my own surprise. Have the Yankees become a fun team? And by that,
they
I mean...
They got fun players.
No. I know they have fun players. But do you find yourself against your own best interests rooting for the Yankees?
I don't hate them the way I used to.
They're much more likable.
They're more likable, a little bit more draft developed. Brian Cashman... It needs to be said. This guy was supposed to. This was fired so many different times. He's the Rasputin of MLB. Where he's still there and he's doing it and he's
well,
doing it.
They're
and
also in the Final Four.
Yeah.
Right. Oh,
yeah.
So it's hard. When Edwin Encarnacion against Minnesota, and I think it was in Game One, but when he punched that double down the line and they scored, and I pumped my fist and I kind of looked at my fist surprised, like it had acted against my own will.
Did you want to punch yourself with that same fist?
Kind of. Like yeah. I said, you know, Edwin Encarnacion is bae.
Yeah.
There that is again. My own face.
Yeah.
but then I thought, wait a minute. This is more than just me cheering on a former Jays hero. I kind of want the Yankees to win, which runs contrary. Like, think about all the reasons why you should want Minnesota to win. Small market team.
Never done it. They haven't won ages. They've got the longest, I think, in the history of baseball, longest losing streak.
They're always getting their asses kicked by the Yankees.
Always. Yeah, I see that. I can't. I don't hate New York as much, but I can't root for New York because I don't know if you know this, Bob, but when the Yankees play Minnesota in the playoffs, I believe this. If you and I were the 3-4 hitters, the Yankees would still win because they always
beat
Minnesota.
Well, maybe not
Minnesota.
The 3-4 hitters.
Okay, 5-6.
Maybe like, or at least 7-8.
They'd still win. They'd still find a way to win. Every pitch, I'd be ducking. I'm like, ooh, that thing could hurt me. I feel bad for Minnesota every time this happens.
You know, I want to go back to the fact that Walker Buehler last night.
He was great.
He was so good. And when his stuff started to slip away, and then you could just see him willing himself, and then Kershaw comes out and blows it. And I just thought, it just felt like he needed to not be a Dodger anymore.
Yeah.
And that's a weird thing to say.
Yeah.
Because he's like an all-time Dodger. But in his best interest, do you trade him? Because he's probably got about 4 to 6 more years of being an effective to very good MLB pitcher. Can they happen in Los Angeles?
No, you don't do that because what you're saying, by doing that, you're letting the rest of the Dodgers off the hook. No, you don't do that.
I know, but Matt, who can forget this? This is like Dan Reeves and the Atlanta Falcons. At a certain point, you're like, I don't think you can get over this. Pete Carroll got over it, but that's because he threw his offensive coordinator under the bus.
Yeah.
Right? Like, sometimes you just have to wear it.
Oh, but the analytics will tell you, no, passing was the right call. talk to a Seattle fan. Talk to a Seahawk fan about that. They're pretty vehement about that.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. It lets the entire offense off the hook that they got 2 singles after the 3rd inning.
Yeah. Yeah, but that was 8 more singles or 8 more 7 more innings of play. Mm-hmm. It's true, but in the end, until they win, he can never be forgotten.
Yeah.
Like, I think he can be forgiven.
Forgiven-ish.
Ish?
Forgiven-ish, just because of the regular season, how dominant he's been.
But he's in the Roger zone now.
Yeah, he is.
Every time when he take like, when the playoffs roll around, and they should be a playoff team again next year, because they are good and they're young.
And they spend a lot of money. Yeah.
So, he's going to be back in this spot again.
Yeah.
Do you just have to treat him differently now? Like, if you're Dave Roberts next year, you say, you know what? You're not coming out of the pen.
Yeah.
I just can't. You're not a high-leverage guy for me anymore. Not in the playoffs.
It's so weird. In the regular season, but in the playoffs, it's just those demons are there. How can they not be? He's a human being. You know, when they say, you got to have a short memory. Good luck with that.
I wanted him to pitch one batter.
Yeah.
I knew he was going to come out in the 8th, and I thought there was a 50-50 chance he's going to blow it, and I'll find that devastating for exactly the image of him sitting alone in the dugout.
Yeah.
Looking like someone had just killed his dog.
Yeah. Oh.
It was so gut-wrenching.
It was, but on this side, man, the Nats, just a history of playoff failure. So, hey, good
the
for them.
The revenge for Blue Monday, baby.
Yeah, and Bryce Harper, and then that angle will come up, and,
Go Spos.
By the way, the biggest loser in all of this, Scott Boras. Because the last couple of years, the offseason has been teams aren't signing big name players, right, and they're waiting forever. And there's who did San Diego get? Machado.
Yeah.
And Bryce Harper and Mike Trout. And it's not their fault. It's baseball. But it's, again, a reminder that this ain't basketball. One guy doesn't have that level of impact.
Well, let's talk basketball, but let's do it in a second because I got a bunch of different things to get to. Now we can...
Popcorn spray?
You want to... Yeah, okay. Yeah. So I went to get my tea. By the way, how am I doing? I feel like the wheels are starting to come off
my
arguments.
Good. No,
doing okay?
No, you're doing great.
Okay, so I go in to get tea from your cupboard, and you've got something called Colonel Seasons Movie Theater Butter Spritzer, and it's an aerosol can.
This can't be good.
And it says here, direction spray from 6 to 10 inches away, adjust pressure on the actuator to apply.
Okay.
I don't know what that means.
I think the nozzle, the button on the top.
Let's see what's in this. Soybean oil, natural butter flavor, beta carotene for color. So what's natural butter flavor? This could be good for you?
No, there's nothing... When there's a picture of a smiling colonel, you know it's not good for you.
I think he's wearing a conductor's
hat. He is wearing a conductor's hat.
He's Colonel Season.
He's Colonel Season, and he is here to murder you.
So, spritzer. Rich, buttery flavor.
Yeah. Nothing about that. I don't know why that's there. I got a rule.
I know why it's there.
Amy.
Totally.
Yeah, and more specifically, whenever like any nieces or nephews come over.
She is the master of the little touches.
Yeah,
like,
she is.
Nobody manages the little touches quite like Amy.
Yeah.
Yep. She is like the Einstein of little touches. The Steve Jobs of little touches.
She's also the sugar pusher. We go, anytime we go, she's got a bag. There is gummies and there's all, like, her bag is a convenience store.
She's Willy Wonka.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. She's 100% Willy Wonka, you know, with less assets.
Matt, if you would have told me 10, 15 years ago, I don't know how long you've been with Amy, but it's,
yeah,
but before her,
yeah,
that you would find somebody who is more into fun than you,
yeah,
I would have said, I don't think that's possible.
I don't think that's possible, yeah.
But here we are.
You know,
you're the serious one.
I am. You know what we're doing in 2 weeks? We're going to Disneyland to go to the Halloween-themed Disney. So that's what we're doing.
With kids, right?
No.
Okay.
No
okay.
Children.
All right. Stop
no
the pod.
No children at
Stop
all.
The pod. What?
Yeah. We are going to Disneyland. We're staying, you know, we found a hotel that's not that expensive. That's close. So we're gonna be there for like 2.5 days of Disney because it's Halloween stuff.
I want to see you arrested. You should be in a holding pen by 4 p.m.
If as a 44-year-old, if I'm on my own, arrest me. But I'm with Amy, so...
You better hope you don't get separated.
Oh, yeah.
Because seriously, you will be in the hoosegow.
Oh, yeah. And then I'm like sitting there holding a drink. And hey, kids, what's going on? Like, yeah.
Well, I think you can drink in Disneyland.
Yes, you can.
Can you?
Oh,
of
yeah.
course, because there's no way you didn't research that.
Oh, no,
you said that a little too authoritatively.
No, because authoritative is Canada when it comes, especially Ontario, when it comes to their views of alcohol versus the United States, where Disneyland, Disney World, once you're in the park, you can take it wherever you want.
Yeah, I don't know if that's good, but anyway.
Europe's doing fine.
Yeah, they're great, Matt. No problems there.
No country is perfect, but it's not like in Europe they're sitting there looting because they can, you know, have a glass of wine on the road.
Okay, so we're going to get to politics in a second.
Sure.
But here's an entry point.
Yeah.
Good take, bad take.
Sure.
Game, I throw out an idea and you tell me whether this is a good take or a bad take.
Yeah.
And this is courtesy of my friend Julia Wallace, who works in the Ontario Provincial, not the government, but she's an advisor or
yeah.
researcher. I'm not 100% sure. Anyway. We were talking, and she made a really interesting point, which was maybe they shouldn't have polls before an election. Polls should be banned. Public transmission of polls, because they reinforce strategic voting, and they also shape policy in a way that might be artificial. Like the Trudeau government sudden push, like after the Brownface incident.
Yeah.
Like, you knew that was coming, right? But, you know, they look at the polls and where they're targeting and this and that. And then they specifically design policies for those areas, which they may or may not carry through later on. But they know that they're going to sell.
Yeah.
And they know they're going to sell because they get the data, like you were selling any product. And maybe polling numbers should simply be banned, if not necessarily to the parties, certainly for public transmission.
I'd be down with that.
Yeah, 100%. That's a good idea. Good take, right?
Yeah, it is a good take. I like what I do now, and I'm going to do a couple more times because election's coming up. I go to the place where I'm a member.
Are you going to be in Disneyland during the election? Do you have to vote ahead because you're going to be?
What's the date of the election?
The 21st.
Yeah, I'm going to.
You didn't even know, did you?
No, no. I thought it was early 20s.
Booked a Disneyland trip with Amy, but you didn't know when the federal election was.
Amy booked it. I said yes. It was not my idea.
Okay, time out.
Yeah.
Not, I knew was, not an excuse.
I knew it was the early 20s. But what I've done the last couple of days is I grab the Star, I grab the Sun, I grab the Post, and I read them all, and I make little notes in my head, like the fact that Harper and the Conservatives, they haven't unveiled their entire platform. I'm like,
Scheer and the Conservatives.
Scheer and the Conservatives.
Force of habit.
Yeah. I'm like, that's problematic.
Well, that was the Doug Ford move too.
Yeah. Like that. I'm
going to have a lot of policies once you elect me.
Yeah. That bothers me. You know, the liberals, where they're boasting that they've kept about 50% of their promises, plus blackface, plus SNC-Lavalin. I'm like, that's problematic. Mm-hmm. You know, the NDP, where some of their wonderful ideas, they're really not sure. I mean, you know, how they're going to fully fund it. It's making it hard, Bob. It's making it hard.
All right, so here's my second idea.
Yeah.
This one comes from me.
Yeah.
Although it's not originally my idea, but I've been researching ways to make the electoral process better.
Yeah.
Because strategic voting is inevitable when, you know, if you don't want the Conservatives, well, you might have voted NDP or Green before, but you're probably going to vote for the Liberals now.
Yeah.
Because they're so close, you're just afraid to have the Ralph Nader effect come through. And
yeah,
then next
course.
Thing you know, you got George Bush, right?
Like, yeah.
This is just, it's in our minds. What if there was a ranked ballot and you actually wrote your top three choices in order and then they collated all that information and took from that? So then if you did want the NDP, it would be easier to vote for them in your second spot or your first spot. Maybe the Liberals would be second, but the Conservatives wouldn't get any points.
Yeah.
Like that graduated system would diminish strategic voting.
I'm down with that as well. I'm 100% down with it.
Especially in a parliamentary system where you have a minority government.
Yeah. And I'm down with it just because, you know, like a lot of people, there is the cynicism of just of government and politics in general. I'm 100% for that. Here's all I want. I've said this before. Just, you know, we don't have to go with Australia where you're forced to vote and they'll find you, or you know, if you don't vote. But just every party, you have to put out a couple weeks before. You've got to put out your entire platform and how you are going to fund it. And even better, you know what? Put the three out there, make everyone read it, and don't put who the leader is and just go, I like that one the best. You know, because quite frankly, I don't care about someone's personality.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I care about their intelligence, but I don't really care about their personality. And I don't care who looked more comfortable on the debate. If we're going to do that, then NDP wins because, you know, he was slinging the jokes. He was great.
Matt Stefan Dion could have been a great prime minister, but he didn't look the part of a leader.
Yeah.
He was an intellectual leader.
Yeah.
But not a charismatic leader. Trudeau may be the opposite.
Yeah. I don't care about a strong chin. I care about a strong brain. So.
Well, you're right. And I wish it worked that way.
I did too. That'd be great.
Well, we're talking politics. So do you want to just dive into the NBA and China Daryl Morey stuff here?
Yeah, yeah. So one tweet.
Man, what a heat-seeking tweet
was. Oh my God, what a great issue. And everyone's afraid.
All right, so if you haven't heard the story yet, Daryl Morey tweeted out, what was it now, 3-4 days ago?
Mm-hmm.
In support of the protesters in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Just brief.
Stand for freedom, stand for Hong Kong. It's something like that. Right. Yeah.
And immediately, the Chinese government shut that shit down.
Yep.
And since then, the NBA has watched Tencent, who own the digital rights in China, to their product, come out and say, well, we're not going to carry your games.
That's $500 million. Bye-bye, NBA.
Which is staggering. The speed and the magnitude of the response for what is not a harmless tweet, but as you say,
it's pretty innocuous.
A tweet.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, obviously it was pointed.
Yeah.
And the Chinese government was intended to look bad in comparison to the protesters.
Yep.
Right? So it wasn't harmless. It wasn't innocent, but it was a tweet.
It was a tweet saying I'm for freedom.
Right. Right. Or at least as I see it.
Yes, as I see it, yes.
The response from the NBA was, shall we say, measured.
Cowardly.
I would say that.
Bumbling. Delayed.
Phony.
Phony.
Terrified.
Maury's tweet hasn't been put back up again. Adam Silver says, we're four people in our leagues, you know, speaking their mind. Oh, okay.
I have so many thoughts on this, Matt, but I'd love to hear your take first.
You know what? I'm gonna throw out a question. And I don't have an answer to this. And obviously, it's easier to handle domestic issues because we live here every day than it is dealing with China. And we don't know everything. I mean, first off, we can just agree. You know, when you hear about the hundreds of thousands, maybe a million Chinese Muslims in work camps and the history of lack of freedom of speech, of just basic freedom in China. And everyone goes, well, America's got their problems. They do. I think China, when it comes to human rights, a little bit further back.
Well, we don't necessarily need to rank them to point solid, which is you're talking about an authoritarian government,
yes,
which has a longstanding tradition and current history,
yeah,
of what we would consider to be anti-democratic policies,
yeah,
and practices.
So here's my question. If ripping Donald Trump, which, by the way, I support, he never should have been president. If ripping Donald Trump cost the NBA $2 billion, would Steve Kerr, Popovich, and Adam Silver be embracing that?
It's a great question, and a lot of people have brought up the Donald Sterling incident where the NBA was swift
and good
in its retribution.
And Sterling was found guilty, right, of racial practices in terms of his housing, in terms of banning, not letting people that weren't white live in his buildings.
You know what? He never should have been approved to be an
no.
owner to begin with.
It was a stain for ages.
100%. And they rectified it, and good. And I've got no, like Jerry Richardson and the Carolina Panthers. Am I sad for the NFL that he's gone?
No,
he was a person with a spotty, at best,
yeah,
personal history of how he dealt,
yeah,
with people. Anyway, here's the thing, though. Adam Silver's league became the woke league.
Yep.
Right? They were able to market themselves and embrace this idea that they were progressive,
mm-hmm,
that they represented the future, and they represented a more inclusive future. And this really comes in the face of that, where it's an inclusive future, unless it costs us money.
And not just money, billions. Like, they must have known they were going to alienate, with, you know, taking away the All-Star game from North Carolina, or a lot of the, you know, being very, you know, pro Black Lives Matter, all these things. You're going to lose some rural America. You're going to lose some, I hate going, oh, a bunch of racist Americans, but let's just go with intolerant. Mm-hmm. And Mayor, it's racist, whatever. You're going to, like, they could probably do the math. We're going to lose this many eyeballs, but we're going to gain this. And overall, the net is fine. And hell, we might actually get a boost. But with China, where it wasn't like there was a huge thing saying we hate China. It was one tweet. And then it was like in Monty Python, run away, run away. And Hardin had to take a video saying we apologize to China. We love China. And
could you imagine the lawsuit that could be brought? And maybe one, not one, I don't know. But if Daryl Morey was actually fired by the Rockets for this,
oh,
I would love to see the legal untangling of the NBA / Rockets' right to fire a guy for that kind of tweet.
You know, Adam,
you know, they talked about it.
Oh, yeah. But you also know Adam Silver's like, you can't do it. Listen, if David Stern could block Chris Paul from coming to the Lakers, you're damn right I'm not going to let you fire, right, your general manager this year.
You know, the Atlanta Hawks are allowed to talk about black players in questionable ways, but I'm going to fire a guy for,
yeah,
promoting democracy,
yeah,
in China.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There was a couple things that really jumped out at me, Matt. One was Joe Tsai, who, mm-hmm, is the co-founder of Alibaba and the owner of the Nets.
Yep.
They're over there.
They're over there with LeBron and, right, the Lakers.
We'll get to LeBron in a second. Yeah. I'm glad you brought him up. But he came out, and I guess it was Sunday, said, you know, he considers the protesters in Hong Kong to be separatists.
Mm-hmm.
And that what China's doing is simply trying to quell a separatist uprising.
Yep.
And that's a particular point of view that I don't agree with.
Mm-hmm.
You could make an intellectual argument for it.
Yeah.
It's clearly slanted towards one way of seeing it,
yeah,
but it is a way of seeing it.
Yeah.
What if the violence in this continues to spiral? How do we look at that support then?
Yeah.
Like, what if the international community, you know, gets a pair and actually says, okay, we're going to stand up for the rights of these people because this has gone too far, if we get to that point? How does that tweet age? And does the NBA have any responsibility at that point? Because he's thrown his hat in the ring. He,
yeah,
said, look, I'm with China.
Yeah. And the NBA is just in this position more because, as you mentioned, they embrace being the woke league. And by the way, a lot of it, great, good, you know, being a bit more inclusivity. Who wouldn't want that? But now you sort of marketed yourself with that. So with that comes certain ramifications. Is the NBA comfortable walking away from billions of dollars?
Well, clearly not.
Yeah. Not now.
Because most things blow over.
Yeah.
The money stays, but the bad press blows over. Think about the NFL and concussions.
Yes.
Have you thought about concussions this year? I'm thinking about Baker Mayfield and why he can't seem to complete a pass. And I'm trying to think about concussions, and I'm trying not to support this league that didn't support Colin Kaepernick.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, I like sports.
Yeah.
And this is always the decision we'll have to make, is what are you willing to walk away from?
Let's just agree to this. There's only one entity that is 100% morally right. There's only one.
My mom?
There is two entities that are 100% morally right. One is college grad Francis Mackiewicz.
Mm-hmm.
The other is South Park.
Right.
South Park had an episode called Banned in China, where they were very, obviously they went after the Chinese government and what's going on there. And then what did Beijing do? They said, nope, no more South Park. They got rid of all of it. And in their statement, they said, hey, we're like the NBA. We love money more than freedom. Da, 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 da. It was great. It was a big F you at China. It was a bit of an F you at the NBA. It was so good. I was just, and I'm like, South Park, you're better than me.
They're better than everybody.
They're better than everyone.
You know, everybody talks about how they're going to try to play the middle.
Mm-hmm.
They call out everybody's bullshit.
Yeah.
They play the best. They really are.
Yeah.
They're amazing. And the other brand in this has LeBron said anything?
Nope.
Because he's over there.
Yeah.
And he's spoken a lot about human rights and the importance of human rights.
He's been in China, I think, at least 13 times since 2016. He signed a lifetime endorsement deal with Nike worth about $1 billion. He is the most famous and most compensated pitchman for Nike. And this might not be fair to say, let me just throw this out there. He's probably on the short list of most human beings that have profited from the backs of very underpaid labor.
Interesting. Just, you mean because of the size of that deal?
Nike.
The fact Nike has that money to give LeBron is because there's a lot of people who don't make a lot of money.
And we're all, everyone with a smartphone, we all have a level of guilt. Everyone that has bought something from Joe Fresh or wherever now gets their t-shirts from China, there is blood on everyone's hands.
See, this
Some
is
a- people... have a little bit more of Macbeth on their hands.
It's true. Out damn spot.
And this is a hard issue. I don't even want to say that you're evil, you're bad, LeBron, you've got to do this or this or this. I'm just trying to throw out some of the basic facts.
There's a few tough spots. One of the things that's not tough is to say that the Chinese government behaves in an authoritarian manner, mm-hmm. and that no matter how they look at Hong Kong, they have a history and a current practice of policies that I don't think a reasonable person in a democracy can get behind.
Yeah.
That's unquestionable. I was listening to Bill Simmons and the Bill Simmons podcast, and usually he's a kick down the door kind of guy.
Couldn't have sounded more scared.
He sounded so scared to say anything that he thought would hurt his sponsorship possibilities down the road.
Yeah.
And maybe that's really how he feels about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't buy it. Personally. And then maybe that's unfair, but I don't buy it.
Also, he's so tied with the NBA. I'm not going to go NBA.
And Kevin Durant.
And Kevin Durant, who, you know, was part of the reason why I've been wooed by the Nets, is for the Chinese, the business there.
Who knows what investment possibilities are opening up for a guy with a media company.
Yeah.
And his biggest thing that he sells is amazing NBA coverage. And I do think it's really good. The Ringer has really good NBA coverage.
Yeah.
And there's this expansion into China. And he's forged this relationship with Kevin Durant, who clearly has an interest of getting into China, and who went to the Brooklyn Nets, a team just happens to be owned by a Chinese billionaire.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, but if I was going to put on my Rachel Maddow hat and I started connecting dots, I'd be like, here's a guy who probably doesn't want to say Daryl Morey was right in a public sphere.
It's very tepid. It's very easy when you're more on the left and you're more about basketball to rip Goodell. And by the way, Roger Goodell should be ripped. He should not be the commissioner. He is unfit to lead. Just all the stuff with concussions and the settlements, it's disgusting. But it still is a lot easier to just go there. And then when this issue comes out, I'm not saying he's got to, that Bill Simmons or LeBron James has to be the on the horsetop of moral righteousness, but the reaction seems really tepid.
And the funny thing about that is, this is a question for our age, and I don't really have a good answer, but is it fair to criticize LeBron for not taking a stand here if that criticism diminishes how we view his other efforts, which he has clearly invested himself in, and that's like starting his own school and working with inner city communities.
Which is all awesome.
It is all awesome, but does that drop in our eyes?
A little bit.
But why though?
I don't know, and it might not
be. Is that fair? I don't know. I'm not criticizing. Yeah. I don't know.
It probably isn't fair. Because we're asking him to do, like, in the end, in life, here's kind of how it works. Be a good person. Try to, you know, if you have kids, do your best to raise them. If you don't have kids, do your best when you can to help other people raise their kids, usually by paying taxes. Don't butt in line. Do charity when you can, and don't be a dick. And that's really as much as you can ask. But there are certain people in certain positions where you kind of at least hope for more. And LeBron has done so much good, but he's in China. And he's had Gavin Newsom on his show, the governor of California. He likes being in politics. He likes rubbing his elbows with politicians. It's part of his brand. So if you are going to be political force of social change, but then you're silent in China, where you're a big part of Nike, where you're getting compensated, how am I not to view all that and wonder and at least a little bit diminish?
I think that's a great point. And I think the way you said it is really... I think you expressed that really, really well. Two names come to mind, and I'll let you pick which one we go with first. Muhammad Ali and Sepp Blatter.
Ugh. Well, one is
two guys with so much in common.
Wow.
I'm kidding. I know. I'm kidding.
I'm like, whoa.
Right? Muhammad Ali.
Yeah. Muhammad Ali.
Sepp Blatter. Which one do you want to talk about first?
You know, what? It's so negative. Let's go Muhammad Ali.
Okay. What really jumped out at me was that Muhammad Ali threw his medal in the off a bridge in Louisville, Kentucky.
Yep.
When he realized that he came back after winning gold for America, but didn't have the rights of other citizens. And it was based on the color of his skin.
Yeah.
He also changed his name. He walked away from the title. That was his livelihood.
Yeah.
He came back and he came back and won, but he walked away from his livelihood. So it's not impossible. We always act as though, I know there are tough decisions, but what could I do? You didn't want me to sacrifice, did you?
Yeah.
And so I'm not saying it makes LeBron a bad person, but to your point, real sacrifice involves giving it up. What are you willing to give up? And I'm not saying like I'm some freaking hero because I'm watching the NFL and I love the NBA and I'm probably not going to stop watching the NBA and I can sit there and gripe about it. But what the hell does that make me? Mm-hmm. Like just another person who's angry on Twitter and morally, you know, suspect like everybody else in my real life, but I get to play the part through my indignation, you know, and make myself feel better that at least I think this, even if I'm not willing to, you know, I was talking about this on a live stream with Strombo the other day, but it's the difference between ideas and principles. Ideas are the way you think people should behave. Principles are the way you actually behave.
Yeah.
I'm trying to move myself to a principles-based life and not an ideas one.
Part of it comes from, and it's a person I interviewed for the wine podcast, we're talking about conscious consumption.
Right.
You know, where I'll...
Is that from your wine podcast?
Yeah. I will spend a little bit more if it's local.
Right.
Versus if it's, you know, from an area of the world where maybe unions aren't very strong and wages are a little low.
Right.
So I, you know, I do that
because you vote with your wallet.
What's that?
Yeah. You vote with your wallet.
Yeah. So I do that as much as I can. I don't do it all the time. I could probably do it better, but I do that.
I want to get to Sepp Blatter in a second, but I think that is really commendable. It's also really important. One of the things that I think is the failing of the climate movement is that they're not calling out companies. They're not calling for bans and boycotts. I'm not, maybe they are, but not en masse. I don't want to focus on governments because governments do what companies tell them to do.
Yeah. Governments are bad at their job.
Right. It's
look at a lot of the leaders around the world.
Their hands are tied because they need money.
Yeah.
And the money usually comes from rich and powerful people. So who's really in charge? And we know this, and I'm not being conspiracy corner.
No.
I would rather take it like hit people in the pocketbook. That's what makes people pay attention. Okay, Sepp Blatter.
Yeah.
He was the defrocked head of FIFA during all the scandals, and there was money, you know, wicked bribery, wicked corruption all over the world. But what was interesting was people who knew Sepp Blatter said that he had an almost evangelical belief in FIFA. because he saw in countries all around the world how they would get into communities, put in a soccer field, communities would rally around those soccer fields. And he thought that he was a stabilizing force for human freedom through the game of soccer in all these messed up places across the world. So if there was some corruption and there were some people dipping their beaks, you know, this is just the price you have to pay for the ultimate good that FIFA did. And I thought about Adam Silver and the NBA, who want to be the next FIFA. They want to be the next global game. And I thought, you know what? You're going to get in bed with a lot of people that you don't want to be in bed with.
Yeah,
the way that big governments are.
That's a good analogy.
The way that big businesses are.
Well, you can see the NBA. They use the same rhetoric. Sport is about unifying. And sport is.
Yeah.
Sport does unify. The more,
but not necessarily professional sport.
Mm-hmm. But just sport. Yeah. Just if you've got more rinks and basketball nets and lights on at night and options for children, these are great, great things.
My kid plays soccer on a pitch that was refurbished by TFC and MLSE. And you know how I know that?
Yeah.
There's a big sign that says that. But you know what? They fixed the pitch.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of okay with that. And this is where I don't hate capitalism, is that sort of like it's in their self-interest to do it. But I also benefited from it.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a kind of a wink, wink, quid pro quo.
Well, there's a bit of a go back to vote for the wallet. I love the idea of companies being the ones spearheading green. Going, if you, listen, you do these things, it's going to cost you more early on. But you'll save money later on down the road. And by the way, you'll get a rebate if you do this, if you keep your lights off. It just like, there is ways for incentivize human beings to do the right thing. Because humans aren't good or bad. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, we're just weak. So incentivize us to be good. And we'd rather, if we, most humans, if they have a choice between good or bad, they'll choose good. It feels nice. Just sometimes you need to get pushed.
Yeah. And rewarded.
Yeah.
And rewarded. Let's be honest with ourselves, right? Like one of the reasons we work out mm-hmm. is not because it feels good. Because what if you felt good, but nobody noticed?
Yeah.
Well, that's not as fun, is it?
Yeah. And what if you had, you know, an attractive mate? You know, that's part of it. Why do you think?
What do you mean, what if? That's basically the story of our lives.
I know,
dude.
It's great. That's why I go to the gym. You know, it's like, oh, I don't want her to leave me.
Do you want to do Seat Giant? And then I got two different top fives.
All right.
How long do we have?
We got about like 5-6 minutes. I'll do this.
Okay.
By the way, how's
my buzz?
You're doing great.
Okay, great, this man. I can really hold my tea.
I'm enjoying this.
You've been on fire today. I'm fascinated by the politics stuff.
SeatGiant.ca. It's Canadian owned. It's Canadian operated. They guarantee every ticket to be legitimate. They stand behind the customer experience. Here's the thing. I've used them. They were good. SeatGiant.ca. It's all in Canadian dollars. All tickets, sporting events, concerts, whatever you want. And at checkout, use Bob and Matt. Just type in Bob and Matt. We get a small cut. You get a small cut. And it's so your tickets aren't as expensive. And it's good for us because Audio Boom, which I love because I know how to work it. It's basically the main thing. It's not free to put up. It's not free to do the podcast. It's not crazy expensive, but it helps. SeatGiant.ca.
All right. I got two top fives.
Yeah.
One is a movie one. The other one is a food/holiday one. Which one do you want?
We'll
do both. But we'll do both.
Let's start with the movie.
Okay. The Joker came out. Have you seen it yet?
No, I'm going to see it next week.
Yeah, I'm going to see it next week too. But I thought I would do top five best movie psychopaths.
Ooh. Wow. Go.
Here are the ones that didn't make the list. Annie Wilkes, mm-hmm. Kathy Bates' character in Misery.
Won the Oscar.
Yeah, she was great. I'm not sure the movie was awesome, and I'm not sure James Caan was awesome.
Oh.
I think he was pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll put it to you this way. A-plus performance in a B-movie.
Okay.
Travis Bickle, who's not technically a psychopath, but it's such an amazing portrait of a mentally spiraling person in Taxi Driver, Martin Scorsese, and Christian Bale in American Psycho.
Yep.
Because it's funny and weird and quirky, and it's a great performance. Okay, so here's my top five. Number five, played by Robert Mitchum in The Night of the Hunter, directed by Charles Laughton, Reverend Harry Powell, who famously was like the psychopathic murderous reverend, and he had love and hate stenciled on his fingers, on his fist. Great, great villain. Number four, / Amy Dunn, Rosamund Pike's character in Gone Girl, / John Doe, Kevin Spacey's character in Seven. And here's why.
Wait, they're tied?
Well, because they're thematically linked, which is the deliciousness of the plan.
Yeah.
Right? Like the whole movies that they're in, Gone Girl and Seven, are about unraveling the mind of this brilliant person who clearly is warped.
Yep.
But the plan... Right. So even though as characters, they may not be as great as some of the others, the plan they weave is fascinating to watch.
I'm going to tell you right now, John Doe feels low. What's in the box? No one knew what was in the box.
Feels low? Well, listen to these. Number three, Hannibal Lecter from Silence of the Lambs. Yep. Fantastic. Number two, Anton Chigurh, played by Ooh. Javier Bardem in No Country for Old Men. Yeah. By the way, I read something recently that said that there's like 100 psychotherapists were polled as to who was the most realistic psychopath ever captured on film.
Really?
And he was the winner.
Wow. I want to read that.
Yeah. I'll put it up on our Instagram feed.
Nice.
Which exists.
Which exists. I got.
And number one, it's got to be Norman Bates. Norman Bates, in a lot of ways, was the first great modern psychopathic character.
Yep.
It was a great depth study. He was so insidious. And I heard something really interesting. If you watch this movie about Hitchcock, what the hell was it called?
Anyway. Room 22. No, that was just
The Shining. No, it's not that one. The Shining. Yeah. Anyway, his wife, Alma, who worked closely with Hitch on all of his films, suggested that Anthony Perkins be cast as Norman Bates because she suspected that he was gay and had spent most of his life hiding that fact.
Oh.
And so that he would be almost like naturally predisposed to understand what it's like to lead two lives, to have to hide a truth.
Especially in that time and day and age.
Well, and I don't think that we would consider that, like, you know, that association between being a psychopath and gay.
Yeah.
Like, but that's not what she was getting at.
She was saying,
like, this is just a person who is living two lives.
Yeah.
He's living a secret.
Damn good list, Bob.
Yeah, yeah. You want me to do my top five best food days?
We don't have any time.
All right, well, I got Thanksgiving. Let me read them off real quick.
Okay, read them off and then we got to go.
Okay, Christmas Eve dinner. Mm-hmm. Unheralded, but the fish only dinner is good. Orthodox Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
The Super Bowl.
Yep.
And Halloween.
Yeah.
And then Thanksgiving is, of course, number one.
Yeah.
But Halloween, we always forget about that as a food day.
It is.
You walk around the neighborhood with a pillowcase and ask people to drop treats in it.
It's great. It is, you know, it's a good point. In terms of holiday meals, Halloween.
Right?
Bob, you ended strong.
Thanks, man.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yep. I'll see you next week.
I will see you next week.
We'll try to make no leaf pronouncements.
We'll make no leaf pronouncements as we prepare for elections and Disneyland.
Yeah, and we should also probably start talking Raptors too, because it's not too soon.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we're going to be getting full into it. Yeah.
Okay, so next week, why don't we do like a half-assed season preview?
Done.
Okay.
Bye, Bob.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.